North Korea refused to provide a complete account of its nuclear weapons program, and when the United States objected, it kicked out international inspectors and launched 2 weeks of fiery rhetoric and missile tests. And then, on Saturday, the Bush administration removed North Korea from the list of states that sponsor terrorism. Today, we'll talk with Victor Cha, former deputy negotiator for the United States delegation to the six-party talks on North Korea. If you have questions about the decision to delist, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Victor Cha was deputy head of the U.S. delegation for the six-party talks and director of Asian affairs on the National Security Council from 2004 to 2007. He wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post called Delisting North Korea. Joins us now from member station WAMU here in Washington, D.C. Nice to have you on the program today.
My pleasure.
And as you note in your piece, on the face of it, this looks like a surrender by the Bush administration.
Well, I think the optics of it are quite bad. I mean, this decision comes after a number of things the North did to roll back the nuclear agreement that they had made over the summer, as well as launch missiles in the area around North Korea and engage in quite hostile rhetoric towards their neighbor to the south, South Korea. So it looks bad. There's no denying that it looks bad.
Yet they didn't do anything different. And the Bush administration, despite their continued bad behavior from Washington's point of view, said, all right, we'll take you off the list of terrorist states.
Well, it looks bad. But at the same time, the reason that the administration took them off the terrorism list is the North finally agreed to a verification protocol with regard to the nuclear declaration they submitted in the summer of 2008. This verification protocol is very important from the perspective of the United States and the other parties to the six-party talks, Japan, South Korea, Russia, and China, because nobody trusts the North Koreans in terms of what they say they have. Everybody wants to have experts and inspectors on the ground to verify whether they are telling the truth or not.
And indeed, one of the immediate benefits of taking North Korea off the list is that they did allow inspectors to resume their activities today.
Yes, the reports are that the International Atomic Energy Agency inspectors have been allowed back to the facility to perform their monitoring duties. At the same time, I think the hope is that the North will very soon reverse some of the steps that they were taking to restart their nuclear program.
Now, this is that one facility at Yongbyong, the Russian-supplied reactor that has provided, we believe, enough material for the North Koreans to have probably a handful of nuclear weapons. They did test, maybe successfully, maybe not, depends on who you talk to, one of those weapons last year. Right. Nevertheless, as you point out, this verification agreement has a lot of holes. The United States believes and seems to have some evidence that there was also a uranium enrichment program in North Korea, which they've not come clean about.
Right. And the uranium enrichment program was the primary reason why the Bush administration in 2002 confronted the North with it, and that's why the North Koreans broke out of a prior agreement made during the Clinton administration in 1994 to freeze their nuclear programs. What appears to be clear, and we don't have all the details, but what appears to be clear from the verification agreement is that on Yongbyon, the facility that you just mentioned, where they produce the majority of the plutonium for their nuclear weapons, on this facility, there appears to be a fairly good verification agreement. Any verification requires four elements: inspections, sampling, documentation, and interviews. And all the negotiators apparently look like they've achieved all of that. But with regard to the uranium enrichment program, as well as potential proliferation to other parties, including Syria, that is not clear where that stands within the scope of the agreement. And, of course, that would be concerning.
The Syrian connection, that was the construction of a facility in the northern part of Syria that people believed, or so we're told, was a North Korean designed, similar to the Yongbyon reactor, and designed to provide Syria with similar kinds of capabilities. It was destroyed by an Israeli bombing mission, last September, correct?
That's right.
The North Korean connection has never been, is that firmly established at this point, do you think?
It's hard to say. I mean, based on what we read in the press, it certainly looks pretty likely that the North Koreans were involved. And again, that is, of course, a major concern. I mean, one of the reasons that North Korea was put on this axis of evil list in the beginning was because of concerns of proliferation, proliferating WMD technology or materials to other terrorist groups or non-state terrorist actors. So it's very important. But I think what the administration has done is they've basically decided, look, the plutonium program at Yongbyon is the one that they have produced the bombs with. We've got to at least get this one buttoned down by the end of our time in office, which is not much time left. And then these more difficult issues of uranium and proliferation will be pushed off to the next administration.
Our guest is Victor Cha, the deputy head of the U.S. delegation for the six-party talks and director of Asian Affairs at the National Security Council from 2004 to 2007. If you'd like to join us to talk about the decision by the Bush administration to delist North Korea, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk at npr.org. And why don't we turn to Raymond, and Raymond is with us from Waterford in Michigan.
Good afternoon. After the first 5 years of Bush's presidency, he's been all, you know, don't negotiate with terrorists, don't negotiate. Isn't this kind of a rebuttal or a counter to his own words?
Well, I think if you look at thank you for the question. I think that if you sort of look at the evolution of the policy on North Korea, it certainly appears as though initially the Bush administration didn't want to talk to North Korea. And now it's ending its administration, taking them off the terrorism list. But I think if you look at everything in between, there are some principles that were pretty much consistently applied, I think, in the policy. You know, one of these was that there was always an emphasis on resolving this through diplomacy. There aren't really any really good military solutions on the Korean Peninsula, and therefore diplomacy was the only way to go. The second principle was that it had to be done in conjunction with other partners in the region. In other words, North Korea's nuclear programs and its weapons are not just a problem for the United States, they're a problem for Japan, South Korea, Russia, and China. And that's why they put together this idea of six-party talks. And then the third principle was that you got to push them hard in a negotiation. You really have to test the North Koreans to see whether they are serious. And it clearly appears as though the administration is really putting a lot of emphasis on that last principle in their last few weeks in office, really trying to test how serious the North is about denuclearizing completely.
Raymond, thanks for the call.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
All right, bye-bye. As you talk about negotiations, the leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-il, has been, reported to be sick, reported to have had some surgery lately and to have had a stroke. Again, we're not sure about where that goes, but nevertheless, he has been, I think, about the kindest word anybody has ever used about him is mercurial in the past. Any idea that he is going to be willing to stick with this agreement?
It's obvious. It's always a question when it comes to North Korea, what they agreed to today, whether they will maintain their commitments tomorrow. The North Korean leader is probably the leader we know the least about of all the major countries in the world today. There is no, as there has been in the past, there is no clear line of succession after Kim Jong-il, the current leader, passes. North Korea, since its establishment in the late 1940s, has only had two leaders, Kim Il-sung, who was the father, the first leader of North Korea, and then his son, Kim Jong-il. And there is no clear line of succession. So the thought of him getting sick, having a stroke, passing away suddenly, certainly raises questions about how you maintain political order, and then, of course, how you maintain control of any nuclear weapons or missiles, long-range missiles that they may have.
Is there not a question of legitimacy? He derives his legitimacy from his father, the great leader. He is the dear leader. Nevertheless, the Communist Party of North Korea has not exactly brought prosperity and to its people.
That's right. It's the only industrialized society in modern history to have suffered a famine as they did in the mid-1990s. Solely due to poor economic and political management. Kim Il-sung, the first leader, did have revolutionary credentials in the sense that he was a guerrilla fighter against the Japanese occupation during World War II. But the son, the current leader, does not have that. And the way he's maintained power is to have a very close, tight association with his military, To dole out gifts to the military, but meanwhile, the people of North Korea suffer terribly.
Let's get another caller on the line, and let's go to Kelly. Kelly with us from Fresno, California.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering if your guest had any idea if this latest action would delay any UN Security Council action against North Korea.
Thanks for the question, Kelly. There are two UN Security Council resolutions that currently hang over North Korea. Resolution 1695, which happened in the aftermath of North Korea's July 2006 missile tests, and then UN Security Council Resolution 1718, which followed North Korea's detonation of a nuclear device in October of 2006. Both of those resolutions are still in existence, and the sanctions that are mandated by those resolutions are still in existence. And there is a UN Sanctions Committee that has drawn up a list of things that UN member states would sanction in the event of more bad North Korean behavior. And I think one of the things that people don't really pay attention to is that when the North finally agrees to things like a nuclear declaration or tearing down the cooling tower from which they operate the reactor, which they did this past summer, or when they agree to a verification protocol, is that these UN Security Council sanctions hang over the regime, and they'll always be a part of North Korea's reality ever since they made those two big mistakes in July of 2006 and October in 2006.
Thanks for the question, Kelly. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're talking with Victor Cha about his piece on the delisting of North Korea. The Bush administration over this past weekend removed North Korea from the list of states that sponsor terrorism. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to Sylvia. Sylvia is with us from El Dorado in California.
Yes, I have a question. I'm just concerned that here the Bush administration, like your previous caller said, have been hesitant to talk to the evil powers, as he put it, and he didn't want to deal with anyone. And now that his Republican sentiment has gone down and his administration is ending, he's in a rush to go ahead and try and get any kind of a deal with North Korea. And in his rush, I think the Koreans are going to say, well, you know, we've got it easy now. We can say that we're going to do this and then later change our mind and not do it just because they see that that the Bush administration is willing to deal with them at any cost, kind of. And then now he's going to leave, the new administration in a harder or in a tougher dealing capacity. And I'm just wondering, what do you think of that?
Thanks, Sylvia. It's a very good question. A couple of things in response. I think the first thing is people say the Bush administration did not want to talk to North Korea at the beginning. The circumstances surrounding that were basically that the Bush administration inherited an agreement from the Clinton administration in which they were to provide oil in return for a freeze of North Korea's nuclear programs. There were revelations that the North Koreans were cheating on that agreement, and the Bush administration confronted them because they could no longer go to Congress and ask for the provision of that oil while they knew that the North was violating the agreement. Hence, the breakup of the agreement in 2002, and that was why the administration, so-called, did not want to talk to North Korea. So it wasn't for no reason. There were some reasons. Your question about the end of the administration and the transition to the next one is a very good one. The counterfactual would be, what if the administration chose not to delist? What would the situation be? And it's very difficult to say, but I think, based on my own study of the situation, that we were headed for a full-blown crisis, that the North was headed down the path of not just rolling back all of this nuclear agreement, but potentially testing more weapons, more missiles. And that would have been an even worse situation for an Obama or a McCain administration to inherit. I think at least at this point, what an Obama or McCain administration will inherit is a working denuclearization process where the United States and other countries have inspectors on the ground that are learning more every day about North Korea's nuclear programs. We learn more about their programs when we have experts on the ground than when we don't. And the more we learn about their programs, the better chance we have at understanding the full scope of them and the better chance we have at denuclearizing them.
Yet you also point out in your piece that among those who object to this this line, given North Korea's behavior over the past couple of weeks, is Japan, America's most important ally in the region.
Yes, that's absolutely true. The Japanese understood when we... when the president made the announcement on June 26th this past summer to Congress that of his intention to delist North Korea, there's a 45-day notification period minimum that's required. The government of Japan was quite upset because the North Koreans had not made progress on the what is known as the abduction issue, which is in the 1970s, the North Koreans had abducted a number of Japanese citizens from Japan and brought them back to North Korea. For the purposes of having them teach their spies Japanese so that they could infiltrate the South Koreans through Japan. The North has admitted that they have abducted some of these citizens, but they have not provided a full accounting of what happened to them. And the government of Japan, for understandable reasons, wants resolution of this before the North gets taken off the terrorism list. So it was a very difficult decision and one that I think was quite difficult for the Japanese to swallow. At the same time, though, this is an agreement, this verification agreement, will get us closer to denuclearizing North Korea, and that is the most extant security threat to Japan today.
Sylvia, thanks very much for the question. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Victor Cha, thanks very much for your time today.
Sure.
Victor Cha, Director of Asian Studies at Georgetown University. He joined us from member station WAMU here in Washington, D.C. Tomorrow, we'll talk about economic contingency plans. But today, well, stock market up more than 850 points just a moment ago. Stay tuned for details on that and much more later today on All Things Considered. I'm Neil Conan, Talk of the Nation, NPR News in Washington.